back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, March 3rd, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. We got the show underway with word that a law change at the state capitol might give Connecticut restaurants and bars the ability in the future to sell cannabis-infused beverages alongside alcohol. Connecticut Energy Marketers Association President Chris Herb explained how crude oil and gasoline prices might be affected by the unrest in the Middle East. He also took a look at the possible consumer costs of a potential state-level climate superfund. State House Republican Leader Vin Candelora dropped by to talk about a threatened line item veto from Governor Ned Lamont. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio came on the program to break down some key bills she's following at the Capitol. And finally, CBS White House reporter Linda Kenyon joined us with the latest on the U.S.-Israeli joint attacks on Iran.
So when is enough enough? We all know what THC is, right? That's the psychoactive compound in marijuana, cannabis products, right? We've known that in this country for a couple of hundred, two, three, 400 years, whatever. We weren't sure exactly what the chemical was hundreds of years ago, but we knew and we know that marijuana and marijuana products now and hemp-derived products and whatever, there is an intoxicating effect, much the way alcohol is. In fact, now there's a growing problem, law enforcement officials say in the state, of people combining both. And you don't have to believe me if you don't want to. Just, you know, go to any sources, listen to what the state police are saying, listen to what your local police are saying, talk to an officer. They say, hey, now that we've relaxed things on marijuana, and this isn't a debate as to whether marijuana should have been legal, that's water way under the bridge, and this bridge and that bridge and the other. But now there's going to be a bill being considered in Hartford. In fact, I guess there's a public hearing on it sometime tomorrow that would change laws in Connecticut regarding the sale, not of alcoholic beverages, but of beverages that use the psychoactive compound for marijuana. So instead of getting a buzz off alcohol, you get a buzz off THC. Now, those are legal. It's not the legality of the beverages we're talking about. It's where and how they can be sold. Very interesting story in the Connecticut Post today, Hearst. Now, THC-infused beverages now only may be sold legally in Connecticut by cannabis retailers, you know, marijuana, regular, lawful marijuana retailers, package stores, and liquor stores, or your packy, or your liquor store there, right? They're not, apparently, from what I understand, they're not supposed to be sold, at least if I'm understanding this correctly, they're not supposed to be sold next to or in the same retail environment as restaurants and bars. But now some people want to change that. And my question is here, why? I know what the financial why is. It's because fewer and fewer people are consuming alcohol. And we mentioned this earlier in the show, and there's been a new Gallup poll out there, or some polls out there over the past few months that show that a lot of young people and even middle-aged people now are consuming less alcohol than they used to. Yes, and that translates to billions and billions and billions of dollars. I get it. I understand it. Yes, I know the reason here. But when is enough enough? Do you honestly think it's a good idea? And again, I know I probably have restaurant owners now and bar owners screaming and yelling at me. I have nothing against you fine men and women. Hardworking business people trying to turn a profit, making a living and providing a selection of legal products on a retail level to your consumers. I get that. I understand that. But again, I will ask, when is enough enough? Do we really, in a time where we have police saying, well, it turns out once we run the tests on some of these accidents, that we have people combining alcohol and THC. Cops have been saying this ever since, you know, marijuana was legalized on a retail level here in Connecticut. It's not me just saying it. They say there are drug cocktails out there. So who thinks it's a good idea from a moral point of view? And I know I shouldn't discuss morals on this program, whatever. I'm not the most morally straight person you're ever going to meet anyway. But come on. I will ask again. When is enough enough? Or do I have this wrong? Now, I was talking to somebody here at Connoisseur in the office a little before we got the show underway today, and I said, hey, I'm going to open with this. And somebody floated a counter-argument. Counter-argument being, well, wait a minute. What's the difference if I have two alcoholic beverages and then at the same restaurant or bar, I want two beverages with THC, or one and one, or three of booze and one of THC, or three THC beverages and one of alcohol? What's the difference? All right, valid point. Or what if, you know, no THC beverages and five alcoholic beverages? Or nothing with alcohol and three with THC? Valid point? Yeah, I guess. But again, are we going to train people to understand the differences between a THC intoxication and a marijuana intoxication? And again, I'm not for telling adults how to conduct their lives here. I understand this. But I just wanted to start the show with this today to let you know that amidst all the stuff that our lawmakers could be working on in Hartford, like, geez, I don't know, electric rates, strengthening the electric grid, figuring out finally what to do with the public benefits charge, figuring out how to get people out from under the anvil of property taxes in these cities or towns, instead of that. And I know they'll say, well, those are long-term problems. Yeah, I get it. I understand it. But maybe I should say alongside that, we're going to allow a further and more liberal, not liberal in a sense of conservative or liberal, but liberal in a sense of fewer restrictions, use of intoxicants here? Do we not set limits anymore? Well, you want to be Mr. Puritanical. No, I don't. But remember, we set laws not for the law-abiding people in society, but we set laws because we know some people won't do things in a lawful and logical manner. I don't get this. Help me out. I understand that, you know, less booze sold, less booze consumed means lower profits for restaurants and bars. I get it. I understand it. Look, a buddy of mine used to run a couple of restaurants, and the stories he told me would make me laugh and cry at the same time. But you tell me, is this a good idea? Now, a lot of you may say, well, you know, hey, they can just go to the package store and buy it before or after the restaurant. Well, I guess. I guess you can do that. But really, I will go back to my original question of the day. When is enough enough? Have we completely stepped away from putting limits on anything anymore in society or in this state? Is every vice okay? And I know what the argument is. Well, Paul, 98% of people can use this stuff responsibly. And maybe sometimes I don't doubt that. But sometimes ask the police, who have to go and clear up an accident with serious injuries or even deaths, what do they think? So you tell me, what do you think? Beverages infused with THC, the psychoactive compound for marijuana. Beverages now, it's big. You can buy sodas and teas and seltzers and juices and different flavors of water with THC instead of alcohol. It's an adult beverage. Nothing wrong with that. But you can't sell them, apparently, in restaurants and bars. You can only sell them in package stores, liquor stores, and other retailers. Should that be relaxed as well? Should you be able to go out to dinner, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, and on the beverage menu, you see your wines, your beers, your liquors, and then you also see THC beverages. Isn't that, and I know everybody's into freedom, isn't that a recipe for danger there? When is enough enough? All right, keeping you up to date on what's going on that could also affect your pocketbook as well, or your checkbook, or your debit card, or whatever. Joining us right now is a gentleman we've had on the show numerous times with his finger on the pulse of oil and gasoline, representing all the great retailers all across the fine state of Connecticut, the head of the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, Chris Herb, will join us with a couple things to talk about. Hey, Chris, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you, man? It's been a while. What's up?
It has been a while. You know, it's probably good when we don't talk, because that means that life, liberty, and property is not at risk.
Yeah. Chris, before we get to this so-called Connecticut Superfund idea, which is now a battleground thing in some other states as well, with what's going on in the Middle East and your knowledge of the markets and everything, I just looked up and I saw crude oil prices on one measure a little below $75, another measure is a little higher than $75. What does that tell you? What do you hear? Because I always heard that you want to look at $70 or $75 as the kind of dividing line here. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, $75 for the refiners is typically a number that they're comfortable producing producing fuel at. So, but what it means for us is higher prices. You know, whether it's heating your home or filling up at the pump, this is definitely causing dramatic price increases that are starting to be seen throughout the system. So, unfortunately, in the short term, I think there's going to be some pain to be felt at the pump and for home heating.
Yeah, because the home heating oil dealers, Chris, and the men and women that run the gas stations, the convenience stores we go to all the time, I mean, look, if their product costs higher, there's really nothing they can do, right?
Yeah, we're one step away from our customers. You know, everyone upstream from us who makes it and ships it, and we purchase it from them. Our customers are the ones who end up incurring all of these added expenses. So it's unfortunate that that this is happening. It's unfortunate that there's no way for businesses to absorb these costs. So we're feeling the pain right along with our customers, unfortunately.
All right, let's get to this idea, Chris Herb, that's been floated here in Connecticut, is already been attempted to be implemented in other states, and now has all the lawyers on both sides arguing with each other, a so-called state-level Connecticut Superfund. Now, back since the 70s, Chris, mid-70s, people have said, oh, yeah, Superfund. That's when you clean up these sites, government money and all that. But what's going on here in Connecticut, if I'm reading this correctly, Chris Herb, this is something that looks to go back decades and could end up, what, pinching consumers here? Lay this out for us.
Yeah, so it's House Bill 5156, and they call it a climate change superfund, which, as you already stated, there is a superfund that has cleaned up properties from leaking tanks in the past. This one doesn't clean anything up. This one doesn't address climate at all. It doesn't lower emissions whatsoever. So they're using a program on the federal level that's been successful to kind of lull people into a false sense of security. And we've seen a couple of states around us do this. For instance, New York adopted this a couple of years back. Mm-hmm. It's resulted in litigation. But based on the New York program, which is very similar to the Connecticut bill, it would cost Connecticut businesses and ultimately our customers $13 billion retroactive So they're looking back over 30 years, and they would punish us for selling highly taxed, highly regulated products like gasoline and heating oil and diesel and other petroleum products.
Yeah, Chris, and you mentioned the key thing here. And when I first saw this, I said, well, okay, this would be a moving forward kind of thing. And the energy companies have made great strides over the past 30, 40 years, couple of generations, cleaner fuels, better technologies or whatever. But this looks, and Chris, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but it looks like some of this is based on the idea of retribution, maybe? Is that what we're seeing here?
Well, actually, those are the words that they use. They call it punishing the polluters. and by the way, they're not punishing anyone except for the customer, the person, the homeowner who has to heat their home, the motorist who has to drive to work or drive their kids to school. That's who ultimately pays this. We estimate that the $13 billion results in about a 33 cent per gallon cost to the customers. So, you know what? If anyone thinks that some of the largest oil companies in the world are just going to absorb this out of the kindness of their heart, mm-hmm. they're going to do what they do with like every other tax and cost they have. They pass it on. And their state court, the refiners actually sued back in the 80s, and the courts, Connecticut courts agreed with them that they can pass these on. So if you don't think you're going to be paying 33 cents a gallon more, then you know what? Then good luck, because it's coming if this passes. And they're voting on it tomorrow, by the way, Paul. Your timing is excellent on this conversation.
Wow. So what are you hearing, Chris? Because obviously you talk to people at the Capitol, your group, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, is very active. Is there any squeamishness about this, or do you think it's full speed ahead here?
Yeah, well, now that it's been raised for a vote, they don't bring bills up for votes that they know that they will lose. Mm-hmm. So I'm very concerned that it will come out of the Environment Committee tomorrow morning. The vote's at 10 o'clock. Now some reality set in once it gets out of committee. It is an election year. We do have a governor who seems to be very cautious and very aware of costs. You know, the whole theme, Paul, as you know, when the legislative session opened, and this was a bipartisan theme, was energy affordability.
Yeah.
So we're trying to remind all those same people who said that they were concerned about the price of energy that this is going to increase the cost of energy.
Chris Herb is the guest from the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association. Chris, in the minute or so we have left, any other things on the horizon? I know there's always a push for new technologies, no matter how expensive they may be. We've heard in the past about this fascination with heat pumps and other things. Besides this, as if this is not bad enough, is there anything else you and your group are keeping an eye on right now?
Well, ironically, there is another bill tomorrow that's going to have a public hearing.
All
it's
right.
A constitutional right to a clean environment.
Oh.
And basically what legislators have said is they want this to move forward because it will give citizens the right of private action to sue their neighbors. You could sue your neighbor for burning propane or natural gas. You could sue the government for not enforcing the properly enforcing environmental laws. You can sue your gasoline station for that you filled up there. So this is another, and this is not in the Environment Committee. It's in the Government Administration's and Elections Committee. So it's a little bit of a little odd place to be. So they're coming full bore. This is not a casual session when it comes to environment.
Yeah, folks, check it out, CTEMA.com, CTEMA.com, the Connecticut Energy Marketers Association, representing the men and women on the front line, the retailers out there. And Chris, as you were talking about that bill, the constitutional amendment, I think the noise we all heard were the trial lawyers high-fiving themselves. Chris, because you talk about, and listen, we all love lawyers. We all know them. We all need them from time to time. But man, you talk about billable hours in this one, Chris. Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
I'm just thinking, how many more billboards can we have on the highways promoting, suing somebody? It's out of control.
Did your neighbor use charcoal last weekend? Hey, Chris, thanks, man. It's been a hoot. Thanks. Appreciate it, man.
Talk to you soon.
All right, Chris. Chris Herb there. And joining us now, amid all the craziness going on at the state capitol today, or maybe by Zoom, I don't know, is it too icy? Republican State House Leader Vin Candelora of North Brantford. Vin, it's Paul. Good afternoon, Vin. How are you, man?
Good afternoon. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Not too bad. Boy, Vin, your friends on the other side of the aisle tossing a little bit of a fit here that the governor last night said, all right, let's figure out what's going on here with these investigations before I sign off on any earmarks here, especially one concerning teacher training here. You surprised the governor did this, Vin, or not?
I'm a little surprised because, you know, this was an emergency certified bill that is typically negotiated with the governor's office. So I thought once the bill came out, it was sort of a fait accompli that the governor would sign it. When we saw those earmarks, we just went to the podium and asked for the governor to consider vetoing it because it's really an insult to injury when we're seeing, you know, FBI investigation into how Connecticut is spending its money. You see other states across the country that have misappropriated funds, and Democrats just doubled down on it and was going to just spend more money under the same old process without a real good explanation or clarity on where this money was going. So I was pleased that the governor heeded our call and vetoed those earmarks.
Vin, little bit of maybe, and we're all speculating here, but, you know, is he worried about the whole corruption thing? Not just generally with this, but all the other stuff that's going on, Vin. Is he worried that the corruption thing may stick a little bit in an election year? I certainly would be if I were him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, no question his poll numbers have slipped a little bit, you know, since this corruption has come out. And, you know, being a human being, you have to react to it. You know, you can't not. So I'm sure he's concerned that it could be hitting him, this corruption, in the sense that people are getting upset with government and how their money is being mishandled. So I think the governor did the right thing. He did have the ability to line item veto. I'm not sure if people remembered that. And I had just reminded everybody before we went into session on Thursday that the governor does have the ability to line item veto any new appropriations, and that's what he did.
Vin Candelora is the guest. Vin, I know you and the Republican caucus, you've suggested, I guess a few days ago, hey, going forward, how about establishing an inspector general or just somebody, Vin, a couple of sets of eyes, much like we have the state auditors, but their job is different, to look over this and to say, listen, it's not partisan to make sure that taxpayers' money is given out to organizations who clearly spell out, you know, their address, where they are, what they're going to do with the money, who's responsible. So kudos to the caucus for doing that. Any interest, you think, from the other side or not?
Yeah, I actually just spent an hour ago, I got a draft copy of legislation that they're looking at having a public hearing on. You know, because the problem is in the state of Connecticut, our auditors could point to the issues. The auditors could point to money that might be mishandled or contracts that aren't properly accounted for, but there's nobody there to actually execute and act on those findings. So oftentimes the audit reports go into a desk drawer and nobody talks about it. And when we created the Government Oversight Committee last year, I was hopeful that the legislature would begin acting on those audit reports. And unfortunately that hasn't happened. So what an inspector general would end up being able to do is, you know, actually start an investigation, not wait around for the FBI or some criminal investigation, look into the wrongdoing and say, this practice needs to stop or somebody needs to be fired and held accountable. So I think it's good government, and I'm glad that Democrats are starting to get serious about it.
Absolutely. Vin Candelora. Vin, thanks. Be safe, and we'll chat down the road. Appreciate it, Vin. Thanks.
Great.
All right, thanks, Vin. Appreciate that. So how about that? All right, let's see if she's okay after the emergency certification bill in Hartford. Oh, my God, it's all an emergency. Where are the sirens? Megan Portfolio here, Hartford Portfolio, Yankee Institute. Ms. Portfolio, good afternoon. Did you survive the emergency certification? Are you okay?
I'm okay, and everything's all right in the world with that emergency bill, so thank you.
Okay.
That's total sarcasm. I was actually at the LOB today. It was It was very fun for me not to have to watch it on TV. Yeah.
Oh, so you were there. You were there live. So you were taking it. So it's like going to a concert. You didn't watch the DVD.
Yeah, it was really
cool. You actually went to a show. Wow.
It was. I mean, you get to see. And I love when people, like regular people, you know, participate in the process, which is how it's supposed to be. So I guess it makes me very proud of them. Even if I disagree with them, I'm still proud that they show up.
Okay, a couple of things I want to talk about. There's a big labor bill I know you wrote about. So before we talk about that, though, I had a laugh. Not at your work, but the minute I was watching your stuff and I saw, like, lawn equipment mentioned again, and I'm like, okay, here we go. So what is up now? Because with all the things going on in the world, we're worried about, what, leaf blowers again? Is this what it is here?
It's actually more nefarious than just leaf blowers.
Okay.
So, yes. So the state has decided that they want to, starting next year, they want to force the state agencies to replace their gas-powered lawn equipment with electric versions. I'm like, all right. So, of course, my mind goes, all right, who's paying for that? So I continue reading the bill, and I'm like, oh, shoot. They're banning it for everyone. They're banning the electric leaf blowers for everyone by 2030.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. I mean, I have all electric. I mean, I'm playing my girl card right now. I don't like to do maintenance on machinery. So I have all electric lawn equipment.
Okay, yeah.
But I keep reading the bill. Yeah. Guess how they want to fund replacing all of these leaf blowers?
How might that be, Ms. Portfolio?
Through our public's benefits charge on our electric bill.
There it is, yes.
So basically our public benefits charge has turned into government GoFundMe. But because I can't pick where I want my money to go. They just take it.
They haven't built out the
program yet. It was one line.
Yeah.
So you really have to read these bills. So they'll put in like the existing statute. So there's this whole statute on the public benefits charge and what it can be used for. And you have to keep reading and looking. And then right at the bottom, when they change an existing statute, they'll underline it.
Mm-hmm.
Right there underlined, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, or PURA, has to invent some kind of program so that the utilities can give rebates to people to replace all their equipment. And it's going to be funded through us on our electric bills.
So
if I hear one more lawmaker say electricity and affordability in the same sentence, I'm going to go and look and see if they voted for this.
So just to double check, this is not just for the state equipment. This would be private equipment too, or not?
Yes, correct. So this, it starts with the state.
Yeah.
But then by 2030, they're going to be banned.
Why am I paying for somebody else's garden equipment?
Why am I paying for someone else's EV car chargers and their electric bills and whatever else is buried in that charge? I don't know how far this is going to go. The public hearing is tomorrow. And it's funny because most people, they're outraged. Like, how dare the government come and tell me what I can use in my yard to maintain my property? That's where a lot of people got stuck on that. But it's like, it's worse than that. It's worse than the government, telling us what we can and can't buy. They actually want to make us pay for other people's lawn equipment.
You'll pay, damn it, and you'll be happy doing it. That's what they're telling us.
I'm not happy. I'm definitely not happy.
Isn't that, all right. You know what? I don't think this is, maybe, now you said what? There's a public hearing tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
This is just like a dog biscuit, like who's a good boy, and maybe like this is for down the road. I can't see them pass.
I don't know.
In an election year,
they're overplaying their hand this session. There's been so many shenanigans this session, and this is just another. Because, like I said, how many of our lawmakers have said the words affordability this year? It's like the buzzword. I'm sick of hearing it, and I'm going to have to Google like another word to use because I don't even want to use it in my own writings. I'm so sick of hearing it because nothing has gotten more affordable for me.
Yeah, and this is supposed to be like an election year. In an election year, like this stuff isn't supposed to happen. How about, I just had Vin Candelora on a little while ago. How about the governor saying, "Yeah, I'm going to line item a few of those, earmarks out of the emergency bill." Boy, his cost. caucus wasn't happy with that, were they? Wow. Jeez.
You know,
see
you know
that?
What, though? I mean, I wish he had vetoed the whole bill. I know. I mean, practically he couldn't do it. There was a few things in here that needed to be done and needed to be addressed. Yeah. But he should have vetoed the whole bill. Yeah. But that being said, I was really happy that he did that. I mean, the guy, I mean, he's not a stupid man.
No.
He gets it. And he knows it's an election year.
Yeah.
Transparency, affordability is on the menu, but so is transparency. And there's been a lot of nonsense going on in Hartford lately. And around the world, and around the country.
Yeah, but
so he did the right thing.
Yeah, he understands, hey, you know what, I don't want this stuff, like it or not, right, may bounce back on me, and I don't pull these shenanigans, so good for him. Speaking of shenanigans, as we chat once again with Megan Portfolio, another one of the pieces you wrote, I guess big bills now are the thing, and what do we have, like some big, huge labor bill that has a bunch of interesting little nuggets that may pop up in a public hearing, or what's up with that?
Well, they actually had the public hearing today, but again, it's an election year, and so certain politicians really love their union endorsements.
Yeah.
And they really love to get the big labor out there helping them knock on doors.
Yeah.
So this is their election year omnibus labor bill. Not all of it's bad. Some of it I agree with. One of the things that the business community is probably not going to be very happy about, they want to have mandatory weather pay. So, you know, it's been snowing a lot.
Yeah.
And my parents own a small coffee shop. They actually had to close during that big blizzard.
Okay.
My dad did pay his workers anyway.
Yeah.
But this bill would force my dad to have paid his workers, even though there was no work being done and no money. And it's a small coffee shop. So if there's no sales, there's no profit. So this would mandate that if there's a snow day or any weather-related incident that forces your business to close, you have to pay your staff. Now, imagine that. Now, he only has a handful of workers, but can you imagine this on a larger scale? or like in the restaurant industry? I mean, there's not big margins in the restaurant industry.
Oh,
it's very tight.
And believe me, I know
it's
4-5%. So just so people hear this. Now, some people may like this. So if we have a hurricane, a tornado, a really bad storm, private businesses would be forced to pay their workers for a snow day.
No, I mean, I've had hourly jobs in the past.
Yeah.
I worked at McDonald's, and
unfortunately,
we never closed.
No, I know.
So I had to go in. But I sympathize. Back then I needed to work my 40 hours a week.
Oh,
that
I got it.
That made me live. So I get it, and I'm not unsympathetic to that issue. But if you're forcing companies to do this, let's just say we have a really bad snow year. It's New England. We've had them.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be real damaging to a small restaurant or diner or any small business. And, missing a day of work sucks, but if my business closes, not having a job is even worse.
Yeah. What was your favorite thing you did at McDonald's?
Oh, I loved working in the grill, but then they promoted me to manager, and I really enjoyed being a manager.
Oh, you
there.
Managed a Mickey D's? Wow!
Not the store manager. I was I was the night shift manager.
Shift
I really
manager.
Liked it. I learned so much. I mean, I'm basically where I am today because of that. You learn
really?
So many skills. But,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent.
You learn work ethic and organization, dealing with different types of people. So I really learned. I learned more from that than I did in school.
Is this it now? Did you really?
Yeah.
Not what nights?
No, I'm not trying to tell your audience to not go to school and go work at McDonald's. I'm just saying I did learn a lot of skills there.
Nights, overnights, weekend. What was your shift?
It was just I don't know, what do they consider third shift? It was four to midnight.
Oh, that's not bad because you got out before.
No, well, that was after I was the manager at Strawberries back in the old days when we had CDs and cassettes.
Oh, my God. I used to love
Strawberries.
Oh, my God.
Throw my McDonald's uniform and go to McDonald's.
Strawberries, going in there and going through the vinyl and the CDs. And oh, man.
That was a fun job.
That was great. All right, Megan Portfolio, catch her stuff and listen to what she said. Everything she learned came from a job at McDonald's. How about that? Seriously?
School is still a good- good option. So I'm not advocating no education. I'm just saying for street education, fast food, I highly recommend it. Just keep it for a week.
And by the way, because I'm wondering, because the DMV does it, were there any concessions on sale today at the Capitol and at the state office building? Was anybody like hawking beer and hot dogs for the session today or not?
No, they do that. I never get to go there on those fun days.
All right, Megan, thanks. Appreciate it. Be good.
Bye, Paul.
All right, there you go. How about that? Megan Portfolio said life lessons learned. How about that? From being a shift, the 4 to midnight shift manager at Mickey D's. Joining us right now, CBS reporter Linda Kenyon for a couple of minutes live at the White House. Linda, good afternoon. Great to have you. No fire alarm today, so we can actually actually talk to you. Linda, rather than specifics here, I just want to ask you to give us a perspective here as to what's going on these past couple of days. Is it frantic covering things at the White House? Is this like an organized chaos as to what's going on here? What is the general tenor that you and the other people in the press pool are experiencing now, right now?
Well, I have to say that every day has been like drinking from a fire hose with this administration. So it's not that different.
my engineer, by the way, Linda, my engineer is a retired firefighter. He appreciates that.
Go ahead. I did that just for him. Yes. But, you know, things are tense, maybe a little bit more tense than usual.
Yeah.
The U.S. Action against Iran over the weekend did surprise everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But the president said what he was most surprised about was that Iran then took it out on its neighbors.
Yeah.
And in fact, just a few moments ago, we had confirmation that Iran did hit the U.S. consulate in Dubai using mm-hmm. a drone. So this is something that the president, I suspect, based on his comments in the Oval Office this morning, really was not expecting, certainly not to this scale. But he also said that Iran's going to be running out of missiles and it's going to be running out of ammunition, and the United States is not. And while at first he said it could be over in maybe 4 weeks or so, he says, you know, this will go on as long as it takes. It's hard to know exactly how long, but he really doesn't believe that it's going to last a very long period of time.
And Linda, finally, I know the leadership in both parties has been, you know, kind of vocal on this, being the leaders that we see on both sides. But a lot of the rank-and-file folks in both chambers and both parties have kind of been, at least my sense is, being a little cautious as to what they say here.
Yeah, because this is a situation where, you know, we don't want to get ourselves into a full-fledged war, and yet by the same token, there are a lot of very strong Trump supporters mm-hmm. who said that the president campaigned on a platform of America First, and this does not look to them like America First. So there's a lot of tension between the parties. The Senate is supposed to vote possibly tomorrow. Mm-hmm. At first, I think the vote was supposed to be today on a war powers resolution. The House is probably going to do the same and by the end of the week. And war powers, you know, the Congress is supposed to be the body that declares war, not the president. Mm-hmm. But that has slipped over multiple decades on multiple occasions. And so this vote could mean something. And then again, even if it does pass, the president could veto it.
All right. Linda Kenyon at the White House. Linda, thanks. We appreciate it. Take care. And we'll chat down the road. Appreciate the time, as always.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. There you go. Linda Kenyon at the White House.